The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, a season that began for us 11 months ago with episode 351 has come to an end with episode 398 after an Emperor's Cup final played on a glorious winter Sunday afternoon at the National Stadium. And wouldn't you know, it just had to be Tomoaki Makino, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It was kind of a perfect ending for him. It was all built to it. It's a terrific goal as well. And he's been at the heart of a couple of moments this season. I remember the away goal he scored at the second leg against Kawasaki in the League Cup, which sent them through. So, yeah, he seems to want to be at the forefront of things, and fair play to him. Yeah, it was a terrific moment and I'm very happy for him.
Yes, indeed. So in front of a bumper crowd of 57,785 at the National Stadium, that included J-Talk Extra Time's own John Steele and his son Kai, Makino put a bow on his 11-year career at Urawa by heading in the winner in the 93rd minute to give Reds a 2-1 triumph over a gallant Oita side and a fourth Emperor's Cup of the J-League era. The game seemed destined for extra time after Mateus Pereira headed in a dramatic equaliser for Trinidad in the 90th minute to cancel out Ataru Esaka's early opener. But Sam, just as I was about to post the magic of the cup in all caps to the Patreon-only line group, Reds won a corner. I held my fire, and when the ball was headed out to the edge of the box, Kai Shibato lashed in a volley. Makino diverted it past Shun Takagi and then embarked on a pretty epic celebration dash towards the Reds' end, most of it with his shirt off.
Yeah, it did. It was quite incredible scenes, really. He was absolutely delighted, and well, he might have been. I think everyone was geared up for extra time. You, me, and definitely Oita. I think they were pretty confident they'd seen it to extra time and maybe didn't quite defend this corner well enough. Shibato, it a great effort. And for Makino, it's just a really instinctive flicked header. He probably didn't know much about it, but I don't think he'll care at the moment. It was a perfect little touch to guide it past Takagi, and yeah, he was off, and I don't imagine he stopped celebrating even now.
Yes, well, he's one of those where he didn't know where he wanted to run at first. He was just, literally running around like a headless chook. But then, once he got his kit off, he realised, he wanted to go and celebrate with the Reds fans, and certainly made the most of the moment, no questions asked, and fair play to him. Yes, he has been a terrific servant for Reds over the years, and what a way to bring down the curtain on his career with Urawa. All right, Sam, well, let's go back to where it all began, and Esaka's sixth-minute opener. Yoshio Koizumi attempted to dribble into the box on the right. An Oita defender took a bit of a theatrical tumble that VAR checked after the goal was scored, but gave the green light to. And Takahiro Sekine, who was upended himself earlier in the move, picked himself up and picked up possession, cutting the ball back from the byline to the top of the box, where Esaka was unmarked to fire home an emphatic first-time shot. So an early blow for Tomohiro Katanosaka's side, Sam. And I mean, we were talking with Johnny last week that, if Oita were to get stung early, then it might nearly be curtains, early doors. But I guess the fact that Reds weren't able to add to their advantage, I'm sure we all feared the worst for Oita 6 minutes into the game. But for the neutral, it's one of those six of one, half a dozen of the other. At least that meant that Oita wouldn't be able to dig in and just defend for another 0-0.
Well, not entirely. They tried to defend the 1-0 for a long period, especially in that first half. I mean, Machida, the attacking midfielder, spent so much time in front of his own defence, even at 1-0 down. So I think their first port of call was try and keep it tight, keep themselves in the game for as long as possible, and then have a burst towards the end. And they did that very well, actually. They were defended a lot more stoutly after conceding, and they'd have a few forays forward. In that first half especially, they didn't really test Nishikara at all. They got in around the box a couple of times, but yeah, it was pretty comfortable for Reds to deal with. But the response was really good, because the goal they conceded was so poor, because it was just like you saw the determination first from Sekine with his run, then with Koizumi to just win the ball to get forward, and it wasn't really matched by the defence. It was that one defender just falls to the floor, and then Enrique missed out really weakly defending against Sekine when he takes it on the second time, and even I think it should probably have been cleared on the line. So for them to have started so poorly, and yeah, you would fear the worst at that point. You think Reds might go on and win this 2 or 3 nil. They did recover well. Again, not really threatening till the second half, but kept themselves in that game, and yeah, gave them a platform to build on, which looked to have gave them a path into extra time.
Yes, indeed. And again, we don't want to spend too much time on the Oita defender throwing himself to the floor. But I mean, the fact that VAR had a look at it, I mean, there's no need for the drop here because it was ultimately very much the correct decision. But I guess that's one of those that you see 5 or 6 times a game, right, where the defender just expects to win that free kick. And more often than not, the referee will give it, even though to most of us, it doesn't appear like there's a foul at all. So, yeah, the fact that play was allowed to go on and, yeah, the goal was scored and was allowed to stand was, good for football, I think, because, yeah, we want to cut out all of this play acting as much as possible. So, yeah, we've spoken already briefly about the Oita response to going behind. Yeah, admittedly, they didn't do much at all apart from, again, a flurry is probably over-egging it, but they definitely worked their way into the game from 20 minutes or so in. But then, yeah, I was, impressed with especially Hokuto Shimoda and Arata Watanabe, Sam. After halftime, they got quite a bit of joy bringing the ball forward. I mean, Watanabe was nutmegging people for fun at times in the second half. And, yeah, they did get some joy running at the Reds' defence, but I suppose clear-cut chances, again, were at a premium against a Reds' backline that hadn't conceded any goals at all on their run to the final.
Yeah, it's kind of just been Oita's problem all season. There's some decent players in that team, but there is no cutting edge. I mean, Kohei Issa played up front, and you would never have known for most of the game. He was not used at all. His movement isn't good enough. So, Shimoda would do very well. He'd get through and he'd play some good passes, but it wasn't like Issa was running into a channel to help. It was kind of he was having to rely on Watanabe to be the only guy that would move for him, and they combined to an extent, but not really to get any sort of clear-cut chances. So that was their problem. And they brought on Nagasawa late on, and then you have to go to more of an aerial route. You have to put crosses in. So it's not kind of the way that Katanasaka and Shimoda and those players like to play. So, yeah, if they just had a bit of movement, maybe. I know he's not played terrifically well in J1, but if you had like Hiroto Goya playing, who was ineligible for this game, if he that sort of striker might have helped in the way that they were trying to build up. But yeah, I think Shimoda, I thought, played really well. He was very comfortable in possession. And yeah, I really liked Watanabe. He was definitely up for it. He was the one trying to spark the team into life. He had what I can only remember is the only shot in anger where he stung the palms of Nishikawa. So it wasn't for the lack of effort, but I just think the lack of quality up front really cost Oita.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's your point taken there, Sam. So what about Urawa's performance across the course of the game then? I mean, it's easy to say they didn't have to get out of second gear with the early lead they had to sit on, but I don't know, did they even get out of first gear? I mean, the early goal obviously laid the foundation for what many of us thought would be a dominant performance, but they failed to kill the game off. And yes, despite going behind in just the 6th minute, I suppose the game went more to script for Katanosaka than it would have done for Ricardo Rodriguez, because the fact that they didn't get a second goal and didn't really ever threaten it, as to my memory, meant that Oita was still in the game right down to the death. And obviously we saw what happened in the last 5 minutes. But, Red supporters wouldn't swap that ending for anything, I'm sure. But, I mean, they did allow Oita to hang around in the game, didn't they?
They did, yes. After that first flurry, there wasn't too much. I mean, Juncker was very well marshalled, I thought, by Enrique. He really didn't get much of a look in, except for there was a stonewall penalty that Juncker should have got, where he plays the ball through Enrique's legs, and Enrique just takes him out. I mean, yeah, I still haven't seen the replay, actually, because there were some people on Twitter suggesting maybe it was just outside the area, but at my first glance, I thought that was in the area, and it was a clear penalty. So there was that, and there was also... So Esaka was played through and he goes round Takagi, and Takagi pulls off an incredible save when he should have been beaten. So yeah, they did have one or two chances like that, but yeah, generally speaking, Reds struggled. I thought Oita defended really well. They were quite deep, as they got a lot of men behind the ball, and they made it difficult for them. But yeah, so it wasn't the greatest performance from Reds. Their player, like Esaka, didn't quite get into the game enough. I know he scored and had probably the best chance, but I think they could have used him a little bit more. But their effort defensively was still good. They were, a lot of his changes as well, where he brought Ugajin on, he brought Makino on. He was just more unlike Rodriguez than we probably come to expect, but he was quite a lot more focused on sitting in and just holding that lead. And at 1-1 when they equalised, and you thought, okay, they've taken Junker off, they've taken Koizumi off, I was quite worried going into extra time for them that maybe they didn't have enough attacking players available, but in the end, that didn't matter.
No, not at all. And actually, you're right. Yeah, I take that back. I failed to put the Esaka chance in my notes. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, that was a brilliant save from Takagi. And yeah, for all money, Esaka looks certain to score Reds a second goal in the second half. So yeah, that's absolutely spot on, Sam. So there wasn't a dearth of chances for Reds at all. But yes, they did fail to kill the game off, and mostly due to the heroics from Shun Takagi making that terrific save from Esaka. But yes, Oita, well, you could see, as you mentioned earlier, the lack of quality, Sam, and that they finished 18th in J1 for a reason, but they certainly didn't go down without a fight. And Shusaku Nishikawa stood up well in the Reds' goal to a shot that Sam's just mentioned, and what probably most of us thought would be Oita's last big chance, 3 minutes from time, when Watanabe found himself in a pocket of space and blasted on target. There was a decent amount of traffic in front of him, but yes, unfortunately for Oita, he struck straight at Nishikawa, whose parry flashed past the post. But Trinita kept on going, and in the 90th minute, Shimoda sent in a cross from the left, and Pereira headed past Nishikawa to spark wild scenes in the Oita end, and I must admit, in my living room as well. And not ashamed to say, I leapt off my couch when the goal went in. And though ultimately they've gone on to lose in even more dramatic circumstances, Oita certainly did themselves justice and can feel proud of their efforts, I think. But the winner again. It's a remarkable goal and an incredible end to Makino's time at Urawa, Sam. He's definitely a polarizing figure who wears his heart on his sleeve, when he hasn't ripped his shirt off, of course. And, a glorious finale for him. He's not retiring, of course, and there's strong rumors linking him with Kobe, if that hasn't already been announced. I'm not sure. It probably hasn't the day after the final was played. But, he was obviously being phased out by Rodriguez, but the ink's not even dry on his contract yet. But what sort of an impact do you think he might have on Kobe if he does end up at the Nova Stadium?
Well, certainly be a personality in the dressing room and it'll get them going there. But interesting. It depends how Kobe line up. If they get another defender as well, and maybe Makino is more of a rotation option, because in that, I think he struggled when Reds went from a back three to a back four, because I think he's perfect left-sided centre-back, but I think he gets caught out a little bit defensively when he's just in a two-man there, and he's kind of lost a little bit of a yard of pace, so I don't think he's quite the defender that he used to be. But I mean, he'll give you 100% effort, he'll give you energy, and he's a clever defender as well, so he'll definitely take on maybe the role that Vermaelen would have been playing with Kikuchi and the other young defenders, and he'll help them along. And yeah, I think just his personality will be infectious in that dressing room. I know he's polarizing, but I absolutely love him. I think the game needs characters like Tomoaki Makino, so I hope to see a lot of him next season. But I'm not 100% convinced that he should be a starter in a Champions League team. Obviously, that's the way that Rodriguez was kind of looking at it in phasing him out. But yeah, I mean, Kobe do get on with a lot of older players, so maybe the system will be catered to suit him as it has been for Vermaelen and Iniesta this year.
Yes, indeed. Well, it'll be really interesting to see if that move is actually made by Makino, and how he settles in at Kobe. It's likely to be a busy season for Vissel next year as, well, yeah, for Reds. That that win sends Ricardo Rodriguez and his men into the group stage of the 2022 Asian Champions League, along with Kawasaki and Yokohama F. Marinos, with the Vissel needing to win a playoff to join them. So we chatted last week about the potential logistical nightmare of Oita having to squeeze in ACL commitments alongside their 42 J2 league games had they won. So, well, I mean, that crisis has been averted, but obviously Oita would have loved the chance to juggle those commitments if it meant Cup glory in December at the National Stadium. But yes, it wasn't to be, and Reds take their spot in the ACL as, of course, a club with a proud history in Asia. They are twice winners and a three-time finalists in the ACL. And, well, considering how they strengthened their squad in the summer, Sam, after, of course, the previously mentioned Kasper Juncker came in the first half of the season, they're shaping up pretty well to have another crack at it next season, I'd argue.
No, absolutely. I mean, they've got the quality. They've kind of got the brand to attract players anyway, and then you add on a cup victory and ACL football next season, I'm sure they'll be able to attract a lot of good players into that team and build a proper squad that Reds really want, well, Rodriguez really wants, and that can battle on both fronts. They always take the ACL seriously, which I think Japanese teams are doing better now. I think, obviously, there was general concerns previously with usually Hiroshima and Cerezo Osaka, but yeah, I think Reds will definitely look to this ACL as a good chance at winning a trophy. I think maybe it's an easier target than the league, with that, just looking at that gap to Kawasaki, and Kawasaki don't usually do too well in the Champions League. So I'd really see them as genuine contenders next year. I'm positive that Rodriguez is on the right track and he'll get the right players in there. It's just going to be that balance of league and Champions League, which is difficult for, it's proven difficult for all Japanese teams really in the last few years. So it's going to be really interesting, but it should be a really good squad that should be assembled next season. It should be exciting times for Reds fans.
Yeah, most definitely. And well, there'll be a number of familiar names missing from the squad next season, of course, not only Makino. We've mentioned in recent weeks as well that Tomoya Ugaijin is leaving, and he bade his farewell after playing on Sunday. Yuki Abe, the captain, watched on from the stands. He was not named among the substitutes for the final game of his Reds career. And also, it looks like Shinzo Kuroki and Yamanaka, the left back, will also be leaving the club, Sam. So, yeah, some of the some of the bigger names that we knew about in recent weeks, but also, yeah, Kuroki and Yamanaka leaving as well. That will mean that obviously they'll need to get a couple more in. And to my knowledge, they haven't been linked with any major names so far, but maybe the club have identified a few players to fill in around the fringes of the squad.
Yeah, I think they must have done that. The only ones I've really seen linked is Kenny Wow from Tokushima, which I think will be a very good one in midfield, and Rodriguez obviously knows all about him. They'll probably need an extra striker or two if Kuroki is going to leave. Yeah, he's been on the periphery all season, had a few injury issues as well, so it's probably time for him to go. And I think Sapporo with the team that he's linked with, if he can get first team football there, I think that's a good move for him. And yeah, they probably need to look at left back as well. If Ugajin's going, if Yamanaka's going, I mean, yes, Akimoto has filled in well there, but I mean, he's an attacker. You really want to play him in a more advanced role. So yeah, they're going to have to look there. But I suppose a transfer business maybe was on hold just so you wait and see, are you in the Champions League? Maybe if prospective players are thinking, yeah, I'll join you if you make the Champions League. So now that's confirmed, they can press forward with that. But yeah, there are a few there. Yeah, there's still a few gaps that will be filled, but I'm pretty sure the targets will already be in mind.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we'll chat about some of the other major transfer news / rumours shortly. But before we leave the game from Sunday and wrap up the season, it's a triumph for friend of the podcast, Ricardo Rodriguez, Sam. I'm sure he and the Reds front office were under no illusions that challenging for the title would be a bridge too far in his first season after they finished, 37 points behind Kawasaki in 2020. He's delivered a cup and with it ACL qualification. So overall, a successful first season at Saitama Stadium for the Spaniard, and with very much an exciting 2022 on the horizon.
Very much so. I mean, this is almost an overachievement. I don't think necessarily the expectation, although it always is there with Reds, I don't think it was necessarily you had to win a trophy this season and had to finish, sixth in the end in the league. Mm. So I think they've overachieved. We've spoke about it in the league. It's only a slight overachievement, but it's definitely they've looked further along the line than they were maybe expected. And then to add a trophy onto that, I think it's just a perfect season for Rodriguez. You can see the style that he wants to play is growing week on week. It's not there every game. It's not perfect yet, but you can definitely see the progression. And now that you've got a trophy on top of that, it allows the team to buy into it. They know this manager knows what he's doing. He can achieve success playing in this way. So next season, I'm sure, they'll take this on. More players will want to play under him now that, you play in a really nice way of football and it will bring success. So, I think this is ideal for Reds, and it kind of validates Ricardo Rodriguez. And I think that's exactly what he'd have been after in his first season.
Yep, absolutely terrific. So well done, Ricardo, and all the best for next season once the celebrations have died down from Sunday, of course. So, all right, well, let's finish off the episode. It's going to be much shorter than J-Talk listeners are used to, Sam, with, some of the major news from the transfer window already. So I guess first we'll stick with the other ACL clubs, and there's been a little bit of traffic in and out at Yokohama F. Marinos with Tiraton returning to Thailand, and that has obviously gotten a lot of coverage in J-League social media channels with Tiraton, one of the terrific success stories of players coming over from Thailand. It's an interesting time for him to make his return to his homeland, Sam, when he would clearly have a lot more to give at F. Marinos, but obviously he feels that the time is right.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's achieved a lot, hasn't he? He's been very successful. He won a league. Because he was kind of in a rotation, I suppose, this season. And maybe he felt, I need to be playing a bit more football. And maybe he wants to return home. You don't know the exact reasons. I think if it wasn't at Marinos, I think he could have got a starting berth at many clubs in the league. But, it's his decision. And, fair play to him. And, it's just great for him to have come over and shown that pathway for Southeast Asian footballers. It hasn't really been followed as much as I would have liked after you had that initial burst of Chanatip and then Tiraton. I was hoping for a little bit more, maybe from Vietnam or other countries. But so hopefully that it's still seen as a good pathway, and we will see more of that in the future. But he's been terrific, and he'll always remember that goal. I mean, you would like to forget it, I suppose, against FC Tokyo, but he'll always remember that as Yokohama won the league. So terrific for him, and all the best back in Thailand.
Really appreciate that reminder, Sam. That was great of you. Thank you very much. So another familiar name leaving F. Marinos is Takahiro Ogihara, who's been very much an ever-present in the centre of midfield for F. Marinos for the past few seasons now. But, he looks like he is returning back to Kansai and, possibly joining Makino at Vissel Kobe.
Yeah, that seems to be the rumour. I think Sergei Sampa is rumoured to be going back to Europe, so Ogihara would probably just fit in that position. They're very similar players in the way they play. He's a good passer. I think there were issues slightly with his mobility and defensively, but it's just a kind of like-for-like switch. It's not the most exciting transfer that Vissel will make, I don't think, but it's one just to fill a need.
Yes, Ogihara previously spent 7 years with Cerezo Osaka before the short spell on loan with Nagoya before joining F. Marinos in 2017. So that's an interesting time to make a move for Ogihara. But joining F. Marinos in central midfield is a very interesting name and a player who impressed a lot of J1 observers this season with Tokushima. It's the former Tokyo Verde youth product, Joel Fujita, Sam. And it'll be very interesting to see how he is put to use by Kevin Muscat and how much responsibility is placed on his very young shoulders from the start of the 2022 season.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm glad he's got his move. I think when he did play for Tokushima, even at 19, he looked, a class player. And, playing under that Marinos team with the players surrounding him, I think it's a kind of perfect environment for him to build. I don't know necessarily if he goes in straight away as a striker. I mean, Ogihara obviously leaves a gap for him. You've got Amano still there. You've got Kota Watanabe, who's, coming on as well. So, it'd be interesting. I think he could slot in there and, he'll only improve. But as long as they keep that sort of style of play, we're still not really sure what Kevin Muscat's team is going to look like next year. But, those surroundings, I think, are perfect for Fujita as long as they stay sort of close to the way they've been playing under Postecoglou and kind of this hybrid Postecoglou-Muscat system that they've been playing at the end of the season.
Yes, indeed. So, from some other recent ACL clubs, it's interesting that Leo Silva, who's been such a stalwart in central midfield for Kashima Antlers for so many seasons, is whether he's surplus to retirement requirements, I'm not sure, Sam, or whether he just fancied a fresh start himself. But it looks like Leo Silva is heading to Nagoya Grampus, and that's an interesting move. He will now ply his trade under the stead of Kenta Hasegawa. I wonder whether that move might have been teed up in advance with Massimo Figadenti in mind. But Silva stumps up at the Toyota Stadium, and he'll have to deal with Hasegawa ball.
Well, good luck. maybe you can tear up the contract and move somewhere else, but it's still a good, terrific player. I mean, not quite at his full powers as he may have been like 2 or 3 years ago, and he was kind of dropping out of the team at Kashima. They'd obviously got Misao and Pituka that were the main two. They brought Hiniguchi as well, so he probably looked at that and think, okay, my time here is probably done, I'll move on. And he's probably got a space for him in Nagoya's midfield alongside Inagaki, because Yonemoto is particularly injury prone, and obviously we'll get on to Kimoto, but he's also out the door. And I think Inagaki will do the running for Leo Silva and allow him to kind of move forward and join the attack. So I think for a year, I think it's a terrific player and a good player to have around the club. So I wouldn't ever say that signing Leo Silva was a poor decision.
Yeah, most definitely. Absolutely. A J-League legend, and no question about that. And he's been such a great contributor to Kashima's success over the last many seasons. So that's a significant out from Kashima. But, I don't think as significant an in is the arrival of Hayato Nakama from Kashiwa. Sam, he's, an interesting young attacker. Not sure he necessarily fills the greatest of needs for Antlers, but I don't know, maybe they're preparing for the potential departure of Ryotaro Araki. I don't know. But, Nakama's a player that could add some decent depth to the attacking areas up in Kashima, I suppose.
Yeah, he's very versatile. He's also been in and out of that Kashima team all season with various injuries. And I think he's young, but he's 29. He seems to have not been around very long at all, but he's somehow aged that far. So, it's a really curious signing. I suppose they've just got him in for his versatility. He can play anywhere behind the striker. He's filled in central midfield. You could play him as a wing back if you wanted to. You could play him as a false nine. So I guess he's a decent player to have around the squad, but I don't think it's a massive game changer for Kashima.
Yes, he probably got a very good agent, a very persuasive agent. I'm not sure. But, yeah, wishing Nakama all the best up in Kashima. And then, another, a significant out from Gunbar Osaka is Kim Yong-gwon, the South Korean international centre-back, who is returning to his homeland, Sam. It's it's fair to say that it just has not worked out for Kim at all, has it? And, this is, I guess it would be safe to describe it as a mutual agreement to part ways. It just didn't work out. And, both parties will just be wishing each other the best going forward, I suppose.
Yeah, it's strange that it didn't, because if you're watching for career, I think he's a fantastic defender, but for whatever reason, they've got this combination at Gamba of Kim, Shoji and Miura that you'd think, anyone would love that combination. It's just not worked between them for whatever reason. So, yeah, he's off to Ulsan, where I'm sure he'll do very well. And it's not confirmed yet, but it looks like they're going to replace him with Kwon Kyung-won from Seongnam. He's just had he's completed his spell of military duty, so they don't have to worry about losing him to that at any point. So he's highly rated there at Seongnam, so hopefully he will come in and be a better fit for Gamba. But yeah, I have to admit, I haven't watched a great deal of Kwon in action.
No, yeah, hand up, me as well. All right, so we've got a couple more to mention. And as they finished higher in the table, I'd bear to mention Fukuoka's news first. Really interesting move here, poaching Iwata's leading striker, and indeed the J2 Golden Boot winner, Sam Lukian, from a promoted Jubilo Iwata. So Lukian obviously could have stayed and applied his trade with his, now previous club up in the top flight, but instead he's decided to take his talents down to Kyushu. So how do you think he'll fit in with the way Shigetoshi Hasebe likes to play his football?
It'd be interesting. I was very surprised that he left Jubilo after coming up and being their top scorer. So, it's a Vispa's gain, I suppose. You've just got to see where is he going to fit in, because they've got so many strikers. I think Bruno Mendes is leaving. They've still got to make a decision on John Mary. You've got Wanma, you've got Yamagishi. I think Hayasashi Joga will probably still hang on for another year there. So, but I mean, yeah, he's a terrific striker. He's just proven himself in J2 at least, because he's had that period in J1 where he looked pretty decent, but it was in a struggling Jubilo side. I don't think he quite linked up with his teammates too well, but obviously that was improved upon in the second season. Yeah, eye for goal. What a goal, better than every other game. It's a good record in that slog of a league of J2. So, yeah, hopefully he'll just add a little bit of a different dimension maybe to the way that they play. But, yeah, just a Vispa's thing, they've got too many foreign players in terms of you're only allowed five. This season they had eight. It looks like they might be shaping up similarly next year. So, yeah, whether he can establish himself or not, I'm not really sure, because I've looked at John Mary all season. I think you've got everything there for a J1 striker, and they've not started him. So maybe they see a bit more and have a bit more trust in Lukian. But yeah, it's just one I'm going to wait for a couple of games just to see how are they going to use him.
Yeah, a really interesting move. And obviously it severely hampers Iwata's plans are coming up to the top flight on their return. So obviously they will be looking into the transfer market themselves, and they might be signing. I'd wager a couple of players to try and replace Lukian's output. It's going to be a challenge for them to find a new player or two and to bed them in. Obviously in the first couple of months of next season, because Lukian obviously had a terrific record for Iwata in J2, and obviously did have a previous J1 experience when he came into the club. They were still in the top flight and were relegated in the same season. And the last club that we wanted to, I in particular wanted to talk about was FC Tokyo. And Sam, it's a lesson for all the kids out there. Sometimes dreams do come true. And I don't know if the general manager of FC Tokyo or the people in charge of recruitment are actually regular podcast listeners or not. But, it actually happened after so many ho-hum contract renewals that were passing through the FC Tokyo Newswire, and a couple of them, notably Keigo Higashi and Takuya Aoki, caused me to be sick in my mouth. Then I finally got the news that I was waiting for, that Jakub Slovic, the former Vegelta Sendai goalkeeper, had signed on the dotted line. And with all due respect to Gol Hatano, who has also renewed his contract, Slovic is straight in on the opening day of the season as FC Tokyo's number one. And I could hardly be more happy about it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I thought you were building up Yasuki Kamoto there for a second, but no. No, yeah, Jakub Slovic, fantastic player, one of the best goalkeepers in the league, obviously. He automatic pick, I think, in that FC Tokyo team. If you fire the same shots at both goalkeepers, Slovic is going to save more and concede less goals. And yeah, magnificent, great dealing with crosses aerially. There is a slight concern that I've seen that with Albert Puig coming in and maybe wanting to play out from the back, that they're not, maybe Slovic's distribution is not the greatest. It's not necessarily his greatest strength, but I just think, yeah, the pros definitely outweigh all the negatives for Slovic. I think he's a terrific player. And then, yeah, Kimoto is the other one that's come in, more of a versatile centre-back, holding midfield, can play various positions, because you've lost Umari, and it looks like Watanabe is going. So, yeah, what do you make of those two departures? And do you think Kimoto is enough to add to your current defensive crop, maybe with Bruno Rovini if you find him? And yeah, is that enough going forward, or do you like want to see a little bit more added to the squad?
Well, yeah, as I've said repeatedly recently, yeah, I wanted a lot of them shown the door. So that would have meant a lot coming in as well, and probably a transition season. But yeah, Kimoto, it's an interesting one. And yeah, there is an area... that is an area that we have needed to strengthen, as you say, letting Umari go. And then it looks like Watanabe is going to be off. So, yeah, he looks like he can do a jobs in a couple of different positions. And, yeah, I would like him to settle in into one. So, yeah, I wouldn't be at all bothered if, yeah, he was our starting centre-back alongside Morishige at the start of next season. And, yeah, see if they can work on a combination that could bring some stability to the Tokyo back line again. And yeah, I mean, as for Slovic, I mean, it clearly wasn't the biggest area of need in the Tokyo squad. And Hatano had come through the youth system from, oh goodness knows, he's probably about 10 years old when he first started you know, mucking around with the FC Tokyo soccer school. So I mean, you know, I've got a lot of time for him, and I think he is a good goalkeeper as well, but yeah, he might just have to bide his time again for a few seasons as Slovic yeah takes that number one shirt. And I can't see him relinquishing it for a number of years if he does decide to stay with us. So, yeah, a couple of positive signings, as the Slovic one especially obviously really took my fancy, and then the Kimoto one took me by surprise, but it's one that I think I can get behind. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, hopefully Puig is having some input and into the rest of the recruitment, and that yeah, we can get some players more suited to his style of play further up the pitch. Perhaps, you know, with that said, though, I mean, there have been a number of the forward-thinking players that have already had their contracts renewed. So we'll see what he's got to work with at the start of pre-season, Puig. But, yeah, the couple of ins in the past week have, brightened my mood just a bit. So, yeah, I'm sure we've missed some other names around the fringes, and there obviously are a lot of rumours flying around during this silly season, with the winter transfer window well and truly open for business. But yeah, we've got pre-season previews to round all of those news and rumours up early next year, Sam. But that's just about it for our 2021. But before we go, we wanted to pay tribute to Ange Postecoglou and especially Kyogo Furuhashi for claiming their first piece of silverware up in Scotland over the weekend. A terrific accomplishment for Celtic to win the League Cup, and for Furuhashi to score both goals on a dodgy hamstring.
Yeah, magnificent performance from Furuhashi in that second half. The two goals he scores are just terrific. The finishes both a bit different, but both top quality. And yeah, he's just taken Scottish football by storm. And I just, yeah, love watching him playing. And hopefully we'll get a few more Japanese players linking up with him at Celtic Park in the new year.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, to any Hibs fans listening, Sam, do you reckon you can point their talent scouts in the direction of a couple of Japanese players that might be able to improve them in the winter transfer window? Because I imagine, you know, Furuhashi's don't grow on trees, of course, but after the impact he's made in Scotland, I imagine that, Scottish talent scouts are now casting their net a lot wider than they would have done, 6 months previously.
Yeah, Shun Nagasawa is a good player, Hibs fans, if you want to bring him over. But no, seriously, I mean, I don't think I've ever thought of being asked that question of Japanese players to Hibs, but...
I tell you what, you can mull that over, Sam, because we probably don't want to be losing too many more players from the J-League, do we? But yeah, I mean, fair play to Hibs if they want to. I tell you what, there's a couple of FC Tokyo players you're more than welcome to. But I just wonder whether Japan is going to become more of a fruitful area for European clubs to shop in after the impact that Furuhashi's had. I mean, obviously other Scottish teams could not fail but to take notice of the impact that Furuhashi's made. As you say, he's taken the league by storm. And, we'll wait and see what transpires over the winter. Of course, the whole work permit issue does muddy the waters as well. But it does promise to be a fascinating winter for so many clubs in so many different countries, Sam. But for us, it's been an epic journey from the end of January right through to pretty much the end of December, the week before Christmas. So what can we say, mate? It's been an absolute pleasure to run through this season with you. Thank you ever so much for presenting each and every week, and for sharing your thoughts on this this game and on this league that we love so much. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, and I know the listeners always appreciate your insights, and wouldn't want to pod with anybody else. So let's do it all again next season, hey.
Well, thank you very much for those words. And yeah, I feel exactly the same way. Just thank you for all the work that you do behind the scenes and getting everything prepared for this, for making it very easy for me to come on most weeks. I've missed one this year, so apologies for that. I'll do better next year. But thank you for my continued role on this and the extra contract I've signed for next season to roll over for another year. And yeah, look forward to doing it all again. It's always a great pleasure to do this every week. It doesn't feel like any effort at all, really, just to talk about Japanese football for not only an hour this week. We need to probably drag this out for another hour, but yeah, I'm looking forward to next season already. I will be glad of the break once I get it at the end of this week. I'm at Christmas Eve doing Turkey and Egypt, so gotta get that out of the way first. But yeah, I'm looking forward to next season already and those pre-season previews, and we've got a milestone just around the corner.
Yes, absolutely. We won't know what to do with ourselves, but we're two away from 400. And I was just about to thank the good people at Football Radar for allowing you to be available each and every week, Sam. But then finding out that they're putting you to work on Christmas Eve, I'm not sure whether we should be thanking them at all. But your employers. We very much appreciate them making you giving you the time to be available. And another terrific season it has been. Obviously, it goes without saying, but we have to say it because they're so important to us. We have to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support of the podcast. We literally couldn't put out all of the episodes we do without each and every one of our patrons. It blows us away that, people are willing to contribute their hard-earned cash to support us. And then, this little podcast that we do. We greatly appreciate it, each and every one of our patrons. Those that have submitted questions, voted on polls throughout throughout the season. You all know who you are, so we thank you all very much. To our varied guests throughout the year, again, too many to name. We really appreciate all of our guests for making themselves available and, yeah, for sharing their thoughts on the Japanese game as well. And well, yeah, to wrap it all up, listeners, obviously we always like to thank you for listening wherever you are. So yes, we will now take a short break, but we'll be back sometime early in 2022 as we get going to preview the next J1 season. So we will leave it there. That's it for the J-Talk podcast for this week and for this year. Speak to you again soon. Yes. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes.